to our Reach Next Generation podcast. I'm Grace Jeffries, and I'm thinking about my future. To help me do this, I'm speaking with successful women to get an understanding of the challenges they have faced throughout their careers, how they overcame them, and what tips they have for girls of my age. Today my guest is Mandy Hickson, who is only the second woman to fly the RAF's GR4 Tornado on the front line. Mandy completed 3 hours of duty in Iraq and flew 45 successful missions, a real inspiration for us all. Thanks for joining me today, Mandy. Can we start by you telling everyone how you found your way to being in the RAF?
Absolutely. Hi, Grace. It's great to join you here today. So when I was young, I grew up hearing stories of my grandpa, who was a Second World War fighter pilot. And I think through hearing his stories, it started to, you know, plant that seed of something that was an exciting career. And, you know, I've heard lots of different quotes, but one I really love is you can't be what you can't see. And I think when you talk to people, which is why, you know, I really love this podcast, you know, you talk to people and you hear about jobs and careers, and actually it inspires you to believe that you can achieve things. And so I grew up hearing his stories, but women weren't allowed to be pilots in the Air Force at that stage. On the first day that the Air Cadets, which is a club run by the RAF for 13 to 18 year olds, it opened its doors to girls, and I joined on the very first day. And while I was there, I flew. And once I had flown in an aeroplane, you do it's called an air experience flight, then that really started to stimulate an interest for myself. And I started thinking, oh my goodness, this is what I really want to do. But the door was still shut because girls weren't allowed to do that as a job at the time. It was only open for men. So I had to bide my time. I had to wait. And I did. I waited a few years. I carried on, though, towards my goal. I kept on flying. I did a little bit of gliding. I gained an RAF flying scholarship. So at 17, I could actually fly an aeroplane before I could even drive a car, which was a bit worrying for my mum and dad. And then I went off to university. And in my second year at university, they changed the rules allowing women to become fighter pilots. And that's when I applied to join.
So I know that you were 13 when you decided that you wanted to be an RAF fighter pilot. But tell me, what interested you so much about flying?
It's just so different. Firstly, it's really, really challenging. No 2 days are ever the same. And I think it was the fact that when you get airborne, I always describe it as dancing in the air. Not that I was ever much of a dancer. I'm 6 foot tall and I'm always a bit of a heifer. But yeah, that was never going to be my strongest suit, becoming a dancer. So actually doing something that was, you know, a little bit different. And I love the camaraderie. I love the teamwork. I always sort of enjoyed that whole sort of messing around with a big group of people as well. And there's also lots of opportunities for things like outdoor pursuits and adventure training and things like that. And so the Air Force or the armed forces really appealed to me as a whole career, as a whole package. But the flying itself was the absolute thing that I wanted to do.
So I know that you went to university, but how important do you think it actually is to go?
Do you know what? I don't think it is as important as it used to be at all. I think it used to be this whole thing of, oh, you must go off to university and you must just carry on doing what, you know, carry on this sort of like the train that everybody just gets onto. But more and more as I look at it now, I just think, you know, how much did I actually gain from university? I gained a lot of life skills. And I think that is the one thing that you do. I think you grow up a lot at university and you're sharing those experiences with other people that are also growing up at the same stage. So, I mean, when I look now, all my best friends are my friends from university still. So you make lifelong friends. But for an actual academic perspective, I don't think it is as important. And I think sometimes when you look at the fees and the debt that you will be getting into, you know, coming out of university with £30,000 of debt before you've even started in a career is a huge debt to take on. And so I do think people need to start actually challenging that process and thinking, do I really want to go to university for the right reasons? You know, if you are academic, yes. But if not, I think there are other, you know, companies are realising that it's not all about just having a degree.
So when you were in the RAF and away on your active duties, how did you achieve that work-life balance?
That is an incredible question from one so young. Yeah. Well, it is. It's tricky, isn't it? So, I mean, I have two children who are almost grown up now. They're 16 and 17. So they're both taller than me now, which is shocking because I'm 6 foot tall. And I thought, hold on a minute. And now I'm looking up to these two boys who are massive. It's challenging. It is challenging, but it's challenging in any job. And I think people always strive to say, oh, I want to have the best of every world. But you've got to ask, what is the best of every world? And I think, you know, the Air Force has adapted its ways a lot now to cater for parents, and there has been a bit more flexibility. But one thing you can't change is the fact that if you are going to deploy and to an area of conflict, then you still have to go. You know, you can't just go, oh, I'm sorry, I need to pick my children up from school. So there are different jobs that you can do at different times. It's not always just about flying. It's called things like second line jobs. And that's once I had my children, I balanced my time of staying in the Air Force by having a second line job. So it was more sort of 9 to 5. And it meant I could still do some flying, but I wasn't deployable.
OK. Recently, when I was on your website, I watched a video, and in that video, you mentioned that you had, since you've retired from the RAF, you've still been helping out by flying with cadets. And I was just wondering, how have you dealt with the COVID-19 issues? Of course, in a plane, it's quite a small compartment. So how would that work?
Yeah, so that hasn't. So basically, we've had to stop. So we haven't been doing any flying at all, actually, with cadets, which is such a shame. It's yes. And I feel so sorry for all the air cadets, you know, who are sort of all really keen to be doing all of this side of things. But basically, since, you know, last March, so a year last March, we haven't done any flying at all.
That's a shame.
I know, it is a real pity.
You've pretty much flown everything, but is there anything that you still want to do either personally or still professionally?
It's a good question, actually. I think I think it's really important that you never stand still. So you might have achieved, you know, a really good level or heights within one career. And then when I left the Air Force, I retrained to be an airline pilot. And then bizarrely, it just didn't appeal to me as much as the raw flying that you can do in the Air Force. You know, in the military, it's a very different flying to flying, you know, people on holiday. And I decided not to just follow what everyone else was doing. And I decided not to go into it, which is why I went into the speaking world. And I ended up as a motivational speaker. And it's taken me all over the world, a career I never knew could happen. And that's been really exciting as well, because, you know, you're meeting new people all the time. It's challenging. I'm speaking one day to primary school children, the next day to like the Bank of England and the chief executives of of some huge big corporation. And you have to be able to tailor what you're saying to make it fit. So that is challenging as well as a business, to constantly look at improving what you're delivering as well. So, yeah, I've got a lot that I can still do within my business. I've recently written a book, which has been really exciting to get that out as well. And that's being read by, you know, young and old, which is fantastic. Lots of young girls are contacting me saying, this is the book I've always wanted. You know, it's actually telling me about, you know, the fact that you can achieve your dreams. So that's been really exciting. And so who knows where that's going to go.
What tips would you give girls when they start to think about their careers and their future?
I would say the important thing to think about is, what do you like doing? So there will be certain things already in your life, Grace. For example, I can see you're a lovely, confident young girl. You know, you obviously like communicating, otherwise you wouldn't be doing this. You like meeting new people. You know, you're quite an extrovert. So you need to find something that fits with your characteristics. So if you were to then to say, OK, I think you should be working alone by yourself with figures all day, perhaps as an accountant, you might go, well, actually, that doesn't appeal to me. You know, I would like to be a journalist because, oh, hold on a minute, I could interview people, or maybe I could be on the television. So it's about finding things that you like doing and you make those into your career. And when people say, well, I don't really know what the careers are, but if you just look at what you love doing, you know, be it that you enjoy, I don't know, really sporty. If you're really sporty, or you then you're obviously really like being part of a team, you know, perhaps if it's a team thing. Think about, what are those aspects of being part of a team that you love? And that's how you find the career that would fit with you.
I read that you flew over no-fly zone in Iraq. That sounds pretty dangerous. Please tell me more about that. Is it as scary as it sounds?
It's not as scary. Well, it was scary at times, because we did get shot at, actually, by some missiles and things like that. But What I would say is that you're trained really, really well to do what you do. And they don't just take you from being a schoolgirl and go fly a tornado. You know, it's years and years of training. So it's sort of the equivalent of the training to become a doctor. So you're looking at 5 years of training and each stage of training, they take you to the next flying level. So it sort of doubles the speed. So you go through about four different aircraft types before you fly the tornado. It wasn't scary. I never used to feel fearful because you're trained so well. Obviously, when you land and you reflect and think, gosh, that was a bit close, then you can think, oh, whew, that was it's good to be back on the ground. I never used to feel actually scared. The only thing I was ever scared about, and I know this sounds a little bit weird, is to say I wasn't really worried about letting my team down. You never want to be the one that's of the weakest link, really.
When you were flying the tornado, or when you started flying in general, did you get air sickness, or how did you deal with that if you did?
I was really lucky, actually. I never used to feel sick. And what I would say is, if you are the sort of person that feels ill on a roller coaster, or you don't like that sort of feeling, you will be the sort of person that probably feels a little bit sick in an aeroplane. If you're not, so I always say when I fly my cadets, do you like roller coasters? And they go, yeah, I love them. I can go up and side, up and down, side, upside down, you know, all day long. And I go, brilliant, you're going to love this. If it's someone that says, oh, no, I always am sick, I go, OK, we're just going to take this really steadily. We'll do aerobatics and we'll just fly straight and level. So you do, your body does get used to it, though. And you get people get sent on desensitization or sensitization courses, which basically sort of takes them up to a higher and higher and higher level, so they get more and more tolerant against feeling air sick.
So you've had a very long RAF career, but do you think that all of your experience in the RAF helped you to prepare for the Kilimanjaro climb in 2019?
Yeah, I think it did. I loved Kilimanjaro. I think one of the things it taught me is how to dig deep and be a bit more resilient. I got very, very poorly when I was climbing up Kilimanjaro, and not with altitude sickness, but I just picked up a stomach bug. And I think if I hadn't been as resilient as I am, it would have been easy to say, oh, I'm just going to stop. But there was no way in the world I was stopping. So, you know, I sort of did everything I could. And yeah, I think it just teaches you to dig deep when the going gets tough, that you don't just stop and give up.
And when you were flying your tornado in the RAF, what did your male colleagues think about having a female pilot? Because you normally think of the RAF as more male dominated.
You do, Grace. You're right, actually. And it's about 15% women now in the Air Force. And when I did it, I was the second woman to fly the tornado. So I was the only woman that was flying as a pilot on my squadron. And it was challenging at times, but the guys were really, really supportive. I only had a couple of incidents in my entire 17 years of serving, which I thought, oh, that was not particularly nice. But the majority of the time, I would say that, you know, the guys I worked with were brilliant, supportive and really, really encouraging. Yeah, a great team.
I know that you're also keen on sports. Was sport ever a career for you, or were you only focused on flying?
I think the interesting thing with sport is I do love sport. So I played sort of county netball and I sort of did sport, you know, throughout my time in the Air Force. I still play a lot of tennis now, and I do mountain biking and skiing and all of those great things. So sport is a really, really important part of my life now. But I would probably never have considered it as a career, because I don't believe I probably excelled enough in one particular sport. And I think you have to have an absolute raw natural talent and then be willing to give all of that time and dedication to achieving those targets in that sport. I mean, one thing that's nice about the forces is that you can carry on playing sports. So I played netball for the RAF as well. So actually, you can still get to do the things that you love to do in the forces as well. And you can still, you know, represent them and play at quite a high level.
So earlier in this episode, you said that one of the main reasons that you wanted to be in the Air Force is because your grandpa was in the World Wars. Do you think that becoming a fighter pilot made you feel closer to your grandpa?
Yeah, I do actually. And we had a lovely moment. It was on my grandpa's 90th birthday, and it was the day I graduated as an officer from officer training and became an officer in the Royal Air Force. And my grandpa was invited as the guest of honour, and he was there and he handed out the awards to people. And it was a really, really lovely moment. And yeah, I think it very much brought us together. And I think he felt incredibly proud that one of his, you know, granddaughters had actually gone on to follow in his footsteps.
Even though the RAF is, as you said, 15% women and then the rest men, and it's quite a small amount of women in most jobs and in higher up and CEOs and MDs. Do you think that in 10 years it will be different? There will be more women in higher rankings of jobs. Would you hope that that would be the case, or do you think it will be the same?
I think very much will be the case. We're seeing, if you look at how much women have moved on in the last sort of 50 years, even, you know, it's why men feel like they're stagnating to some degree, is because the advancement of women is enormous, whereas men are still doing what men have always done, you know. And so if you think, if you carry on with that trend, then actually in 10 years time, what I really hope is that we're not having a conversation about is it a women thing or is it a man thing, that actually it's just going to be more and more equal playing field. And I think one of the big things that's changing for that as well is that men want to take on a different role too. The men want to be more proactive. They want to be more hands-on parents. So they are the ones that are also saying, actually, I want to be taking flexible working hours. I want to be home with my children as well. And I think once we're getting that, then you start to see a shift of it being, you know, the traditionally a woman's role and it becoming more just 50-50 in the household. And once we get that, then you're going to see that actually progress and it's going to become hopefully more normalized in the workplace too.
Okay, so before we finish off today, I just have to ask this. Being a fighter pilot is dangerous, and you said earlier that a couple of times in Iraq you got shot by missiles, and that sounds super scary. Have you ever had a near-death experience?
Yeah, my closest near-death experience was when I landed on a runway in Canada, and it was a really, really flooded runway. And when I landed, we ended up skidding, and it's sort of what's called aquaplaning, if you've ever been going on a motorway or something. And if there's a really, really big puddle and the car feels like it skids over the top of it and it's quite scary. Well, it's really scary when you're traveling at 160 miles an hour and you've just landed a jet and it spins through 90 degrees. And we were traveling sideways at 160 miles an hour. And my navigator said, I'm not ejecting yet. And I thought, oh my goodness, I hadn't even thought about ejecting. When you pull an ejection seat handle and you fire out the top of your canopy. And I just thought, as soon as he said that, I thought, oh my goodness. So that was probably the closest I felt, probably I've ever felt, to actually losing my life. Yeah.
But don't you think being ejected would be pretty cool?
Well, I don't know, actually. I mean, your body, you pull a really lot of G-force, like 20 times the force of gravity. So, you know, actually, it's so much G-force that sometimes you can compress your spinal cord a tiny bit. So, yeah, it's incredible to eject. So it's not a pleasant experience. It's not quite like that, the ride at Alton Towers or something, where you whip up and down, you know.
Okay, maybe not then, maybe not. That sounds like something that might happen to James Bond. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, Mandy. Thank you so much. And I'm sure everyone listening will be now thinking about some of the choices they're about to make in their careers. Keep listening to the Reach Next Generation podcast as I talk to many more brilliant women. Thank you to our sponsors, Haynes Watts and Levi Strauss, for their amazing support.